Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This is an Empowerment Hour. Today, we have so much positive information about living longer lives. I mean really longer lives. Brand new information from the world scientific peer review literature. I'll share that with you. Mind you, this is mainstream science telling us how much longer we could live. We're going to speak briefly about how bacteria talk to each other and our cells in the same way. Why is that important? Well, I'll share some insights. For the women in this audience, if you've been having a glass of wine each day, you could be keeping breast cancer away. I'll give you the latest on that. Also, we want to take a look at how fruits and vegetables in our diet, hopefully organic, can help with kidney problems. Then from our environmental segment today, the rate of climate change has scientists worried because of something other than global warming. It's called ocean acidification, and it's moving at a very fast rate. No one expected it. So it's climate change's evil twin. So I'll talk about ocean acidification. Also, the death of birds and bees all across America. Very important from F. William Indall. Then scientists are calling for a ban on biopatented products. And then a major land grab. And we'll share that with you. And it's a global epidemic. Anywhere where there's good quality land, land that could be used to grow foods, major corporations, hedge funds, equity partnerships are buying it up, working with governments, and displacing millions of individuals. And they don't intend to feed us with that. I'll give you the latest on that, time permitting. Our guest today in the second part of our discussion here will be Dr. Webster Tarpley. Now, he is a philosopher of history, economics. He's a renowned critic of U.S. foreign and domestic policy. He is an activist historian. And he became well known for his book, George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography. He has degrees from Princeton University, Skidmore University. He was a Fulbright scholar and holds a doctorate in history from Catholic University. And he is the author of a lot of important works, and he's highly respected around the world. We're going to break an exclusive on our program today about what really happened in Libya, who was behind it. Also, I'll ask him what he expects to happen with a background in economics and history and social issues, much like Gerald Celante or Max Kaiser. What does he see happening in the next 4 years? Then, if time permits, I'm not sure it will, I'm going to share 5 myths that dehumanize the poor. Why do we still keep these myths? I've just finished a major documentary on poverty. I also have another documentary on getting old in America, and sometimes the two are the same, older people who are poor. So why is it that both this current administration, with the power to help, has not, and a would-be administration, had Romney won, certainly would not have helped? Why? What is it about being poor that we have such a difficult task of embracing? Then from Dennis Kucinich, weapons of mass distraction, the big long lies about Iraq linger. As you see, we have a lot to share, all of it with an idea of empowering us. Let us begin. I believe that we should be consuming about 11 servings minimally a day of fruits and vegetables. I believe that we should buy them organic, locally grown when possible. If not, then at least organic through your food co-op or your health food store or your farmer's market. I also believe that if you can't get it that way, then get it frozen, because it's almost always washed and frozen within a day or earlier, even hours after being harvested. And that's why sometimes fresh strawberries don't taste as unique as thawed frozen ones, because the thawed frozen ones were capturing the enzyme at its maturity. It might be a week, 2 weeks after they've been picked that you actually get a fruit. But in any case, get them into your body. The latest study from Texas A&M College of Medicine says that eating more fruits and vegetables helps the kidneys, especially people who have problems with their kidneys. And this is not the first study. This is the second study. And in it says, quote, poor nutrition plays a role in the association between poverty and kidney disease. And a third study found that black kidney disease patients are more likely to have uncontrolled blood pressure than white patients. So you have three studies, all presented at the American Society of Nephrology's annual meeting, showing you why the diet is important. And they even talk about how alkaline therapy is used to treat kidney disease patients with severe metabolic acidosis. Now, think if you were having fruits and vegetables. They're alkaline, highly alkaline. And that's what is important for kidney patients, where a highly acidic diet, meat, dairy, alcohol, sugar, those are all bad for the kidneys. So this is good, because this is mainstream science with three separate studies, another one from Dr. Cruz and John Hopkins School of Medicine. Said, quote, an unhealthy diet is strongly associated with kidney disease among poor individuals. So that's important for all of us. Now, last evening, I snuck away to catch a film, as I frequently do. And there's a wonderful art theater on the Upper West Side of Manhattan at 63rd and Broadway. And they show the better art films. In fact, there's a whole bunch of art films in that theaters in that area. And I saw a film, a small film, an independent low-budget film called The Late Quartet. And the theme of the film was that there are four people, all master violinists and viola player, who have been at the top of their game for about 25 years. And the lead violinist, what's called the first violinist, and the second violinist, only when we start getting into the film, you start seeing the human drama and the human dynamics that go together when people work together. But the whole purpose of the film was that the lead character played in, I consider, the finest role since way back in the 70s when Christopher Walken did the, I think it was, who produced and directed the film, The Deer Hunter? Was it Joseph Mino? I'm not sure who that was. In any case, this is his best role. Very understated, just magnificent. He has got Parkinson's, the beginning of Parkinson's, and he's told he has to take this drug, which will impact his dopamine levels, and that his hands begin to shake, so he has to retire from the group. So the whole film is based upon the inner dynamics of him saying he has to leave and getting someone to replace him, and then how this impacts the whole group. And it's just wonderful. It is one of the most intelligently written, beautifully acted, completely believable films I've seen in a long time. I came out very inspired by it. But I'm thinking as I'm watching this, I'm looking at what they're eating. I'm looking at what they're drinking. I'm looking at the fact that none of them exercise in any way. They're overweight or sick. They drink a lot. And their food's just standard American fare. So at no point is there the idea that maybe there's another way to approach Parkinson. And while I'm sitting there watching this play out, I remember a man, an African-American engineer named Thomas, age 70, who began a study with us some 5 years ago, and we filmed him. You can actually see him in one of the documentaries I present on PBS stations. And his hands are shaking like a leaf. He can't maintain his balance. He slurs his speech. His short-term memory is gone, and he was even suicidal. As he said to me, he said, I really don't know what I should live for when it's only going to get worse, and I've gone to classes where they tell me how my whole being is going to shrink, my world's going to shrink, everything's going to collapse in on me, and I'll have to be attended to by people and until it's over. And he's, I don't want to put anyone through that burden. I don't want to put my family through that burden. I'd rather just end it. And I said to him, I said, but hold on. You're assuming that there's only one way and one truth, the official way. And yes, there are scientists and physicians doing all they can in the best, with the best of intents, to help people with Parkinson's, as there is with arthritis and cancer and heart disease. But the fact that they're failing doesn't mean everyone's failed. There are a lot of people who are succeeding. So he joined the study group, and he went through it, and 16 months later, he had no Parkinson. We filmed him. His hands were just steady as a rock. His memory came back, but a unique side effect, his memory came back as an acute memory. What do I mean by an acute memory? He said that he was concerned because he remembered everything. I said, give me an example. He said, challenge me. I said, what year did you graduate from high school? He told me the year. How many were in your class? 22. Told me. I said, name them. He named the first and last name of these students from 50 years before, 53 years before. Could you do that? I don't know anyone who could do that. And he did it. And he said, and I said, well, that means that we have rebuilt the brain and re-energized the neurons, and we've liberated the communication, the synoptics transmission. So now the memory that is always there, we never lose our memory. We just lose connection and conductivity to the memory cells. In other words, it's a door that has everything behind it. We just don't know what the combination of the lock is to get in. And you have done that. And but he was 100% on the protocol. He was at every meeting. And it took about 16 months. And while I was watching this, I was thinking this Christopher Walken film here, all these kind of, I'm sure most of the audience, they were older people. Most were probably very, very much into the culture because, after all, where but on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, from 57th Street to 120th Street, from River to Park, do you have more concentration of creative people, writers, artists, dancers, singers, poets, philosophers, than any place else I know of in America, per population? Well, that's where I live. That's where my office is. I meet a lot of these people, and I'm thinking, they're all going to walk out of this theater thinking, oh my goodness, if they should ever have Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or dementia or anything else, there's no hope. And there is hope. So for me, something as simple as start with the fruits and vegetables, start with giving up the bad food, can make all the difference in the world. And by the way, in another 2 months, I'm starting a study group on Alzheimer's to see if in a year what we can do to improve it, reverse it, and it'll be a large enough group that it will, if we succeed, it should be a door opening to a lot of people. Now, a lot of people think because you're healthy or you're the normal weight or your blood pressure's all right that you don't have to be concerned about your sodium intake. Wrong. According to the peer-reviewed journal Circulation, even healthy people need to limit their salt consumption. Now, salt's a major part of the American diet, and we just eat way too much. We should be eating between 800 to maybe 1,500 milligrams a day, maximum, because that's all we need. But we're eating a lot more than that. In just one fast food meal, you can get over 5,000 milligrams. That's just one meal. And according to even the latest research, even children are eating over 3,400 milligrams a day. And so we wonder why we have so much disease. So you got to understand that salt can do more than cause high blood pressure. It can contribute to multiple sclerosis. According to an article in the peer-reviewed journal Radiology, multiple sclerosis is in build up with sodium in the brain. You're going to increase your multiple sclerosis level with more sodium. So bring down the sodium. And if you still want the taste, use lemon and lime juice and vinegar. They'll give you the same taste. Now, for those of you who know someone who have asthma, and millions of adults and children do, according to the Department of Biomedical Sciences, the University of Pescara in Italy, pycnogenol, 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 which is also French maritime pine bark extract, reduces critical asthma symptoms. And they did this in a major study. So it wasn't a high amount, but it reduced the symptoms by 55%. That's a big drop. It also reduced night awakenings caused by asthma symptoms. It lowered the amounts of days with more than one asthma score. It decreased frequency of consultation by a general practitioner. So, pycnogenol, if you have asthma or know someone who does, that can make a major difference and help them. And that's what we want to do, empowering information. And for those of you who wonder, what does this ashwagandha do? Ashwagandha. It's from Italy. It's from India. And it's called by many different names. It's in a family called Withania somnifera. And it's also in the Solanaceae family. And it's used, it's a bush. It's a branched undershrub. And it's got kind of like an orange-red berry. And it grows in very moist places. And it's used for the longest period of time in India for a lot of things. But now they see that it's in all these Indian individuals' tribal pouches. They use it daily because it can help them with, back pain, sleeplessness, weak eyesight, heart ailments, gastric trouble, diabetes, and arthritis. So this is all from the peer-reviewed literature, hundreds of studies on it. So just put it on your list of things that can make a difference. And it's easy to get, inexpensive, and it's safe. And finally, two studies. One from the a University Department of Oncology done at the University of Cambridge University in England. A glass of red wine a day boosts the survival chances of women with, especially ones with very low alcohol content. And they did this in a study of women, and it made all the difference. There were 13,000 women in the study, and it was the largest study of its kind. And women with breast cancer were followed for an average of 7 years. And those who took a small glass, even a half a glass, of wine each day increased their level of survival by up to 20%. So that's good news. And finally, why should we pay attention to the bacteria in our body? Well, because they communicate with each other. You have good bacteria when you have probiotics, and one of the best ways is getting sauerkraut. That's good. And bad bacteria from sugar and refined carbohydrates, your bagel, your breads, candies, they break down into bad bacteria. According to the latest article on PLOS pathogens, as reported in Science Daily, done at Lycoping University in Sweden, quote, bacteria can talk to each other via molecules they themselves produce. The phenomena is called quorum sensing and is important when an infection propagates. And it shows how they communicate with one another. The results are published in this. So what does this mean in lay language? Well, here's what it means. And for our discussion, we're going to connect two concepts together. Every time you intend to eat something because you believe or know that it's good for you, drink something that is good for you, you are connecting an energy to the process of what you're doing. That's epigenetics. Epa, the larger environment, genetics, your genes. So your intent to do well, to eat well, to think well, to be well, all that creates a memory. The memory then becomes a part of the memory of the bacteria, and then the bacteria communicate good messages between cells. Then the bacteria can stimulate other good bacteria, and then the good bacteria can help the actual synthesis of nutrients, the expulsion of toxins. So that's all good. Now extend that, because in my world, you cannot have a truth that is universal that is not also applicable universally. Now, what do I mean by that? That means that if you found that your positive thoughts could impact another person in a positive way, in the South, we have individuals, and they're called sensitives. My mother was a sensitive, someone who will sit and hold your hand, look you in the eyes, and with compassion and love, share a thought with you that inspires you to feel some comfort and hope that you can get better. That person's energy is transferred. We know that there are doctors in the South, I grew up with them, and they were called Christian doctors. Now, what's the difference between a Christian doctor and a regular doctor is a Christian? The doctor who would sit with a patient and pray with them for recovery. Now, for years and decades, this was considered stupid and non-scientific. The trouble is, when someone actually did a study, they found that the people who were getting a doctor sitting with them and praying with them had a greater rate of recovery, and those who had prayer who didn't even know they were being prayed for, it worked. And so you can't have an energy that works and then say, but it only works in one area. Wrong. It works in everything else in life. That hence, a universal truth is universally applicable. So, if I choose or you choose our foods because we want to be healthier, we drink what we want to be healthier, we talk with people based upon being inspired, motivated, empowered by them, friends, family, one another, who we listen to on the radio, watch on television, who we read their books or articles, all this is also exchanging an energy. That's why I believe, and many of you may appreciate this, some may not, I believe that when you sit in front of a painting or a sculpture or sit in front of an orchestra, the energy of that creative experience is also epigenetically moving you in a direction of healing or inspiring you to act in a certain way. Hence, I do not believe we have anything that is an inanimate, inert object. That's why so many people, myself included, will sit before a work of art and feel uplifted, feel invigorated, feel revived in the process. So now, think about your choices, because every choice you make is going to have an epigenetic reality to it. And then think of the bad bacteria, because you can't have a truth that's universal without having its opposite, which is universal. So if a positive thought can cause positive energy exchange, so too then, by the same dynamic, does a negative thought have negative exchange and consequences. Now think about the pessimism. Think about negativity. Think about hate, bias, bigotry. Think about victimization. Think about taking on the mantle of complete suffering. That then tells the cells, because of the intent, that I'm hostile, angry, bitter, selfish, greedy, that I am whatever that energy thought is, there is a consequence. So again, you can't have a positive truth without having its equal and viable negative truth. So ask yourself, go back to my original point, how can you be healthy if you're not happy? How can you solve problems if you don't have a positive perspective on that? That's the reality I'm going to share. And that is a study that just confirmed at least half of it, because they're saying cells are communicating positive messages. Well, a cell can't communicate a positive message unless we are the ones who are the progenitors and inspire that thought. And that's why I believe that no matter what the crisis, no matter what the circumstances, no matter what the challenge, no matter what we are faced with, we must look for the positive lesson in all things and apply that to our lives. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
She didn't bat an eye as I packed my bags to leave. I thought she would start to cry. I sit around my room and weep. But you're the girl. She fooled me this time. She acted like I was the last thing on her mind. I would like to start all over again. Baby, can I change my mind? I just want to change my mind.
I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. This is a forum for progressive minds. And a few program announcements before we go to our guest who's standing by. I've given you his bio earlier. Dr. Webster Tarpley, T-A-R-P-L-E-Y, is my guest today. And Dr. Tarpley will, he has a website called tarpley.net. His new book is Just Too Weird, Bishop Romney and the Mormon Takeover of America. We'll discuss that. But a couple program announcements. As many of you know, for the past week, the last 7 days, we turned our live broadcast over at our studio to WBAI so we could broadcast live each day, and we were happy to do that. Yesterday, we found a solution, and we're implementing it immediately and all today so that they will have an emergency studio that we are all constructing on premises so that we can get back on the air live as well, because otherwise it's adversely affecting our own audience who've been listening to repeats except for this program, which is posted right afterwards. So the good news is that my hope is that by later tonight, we will have both WBAI and Progressive Radio Network both able to broadcast live. So we're intending to be live on the air with all of our hosts, all of them, Utrice Lead and Richard Martin, everyone else you're used to listening to tomorrow morning. So please share that with him, everyone, and we're back. And yet BAI will continue to be able to broadcast live 24/7 until they're able to reenter their studios, which I was told last night might be up to 2 weeks. If it's sooner, great. But if it's longer, at least they'll have that form. A few other announcements. Because of all the problems with the transportation, the cost of gas, and everything else, a lot of people have not been coming in, but we do have here for you individuals who are highly qualified, very motivated to help you, especially with crisis in your life, health crisis. And if you give a call, it's free counseling. You don't pay a penny. It's just as a public service, because you have no idea how many people call and email and show up. They need help. I work with the most seriously ill of them, but everyone else who's not near death's door, you have people, we have many different people, registered dietitians, nutritionists, people who have good backgrounds in all areas to help you. And again, it's free. If you make it in, at least there are people to help you in this time. The number to call is 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000. For those of you who got your bulk, and good for you, it's in, come and pick it up. All right, it's there for you. We need you to pick it up. And for those of you who were not able to get in last Saturday or Sunday, I've extended to this weekend because people called and said, you know, we couldn't get in, we don't have the gas, or there's no public transportation last weekend. So this Saturday and this Sunday from 9 to 9, as a public service to help people who want to have non-perishable supplies in bulk, you can show up at 89th and Broadway in Manhattan from 9 to 9. And get them. But this is the last 2 days I can do this. And the big announcement today is this, that we lost last night on Proposition 37, saying yes to labeling genetically engineered food. And we lost for many reasons, not the least of which was because they were having, in the last week, an ad per half hour. They spent, we're guesstimating, over $50 million. We had the very diligent and hardworking people at the grassroots level. And so they thought it was over. And everyone today on my overnight show on our sister station, KPFK, the calls poured in, and we talked about this. And we were concerned that KPFK and KPFA, our sister stations, did not get behind this. In fact, chose not to. And that's their right. But they should remember that in the future, because for whatever reason they chose not to, this is, shouldn't be a political issue or personal animus issue. This should be about the safety of our food supply and the power of Monsanto to control what we eat. So we're going to start all over again. And this time we're not going to be limited by what went on in the inner politics in California. We're going to do it in New York and New Jersey and Connecticut. Mark my words, within a year we will have a referendum up on the ballots to succeed where they failed. We only failed by a small margin. Had we had the stations motivating this, the producers to do a lot of talk on this and debates, I believe without question we would have won, and that would have destroyed Monsanto. It would have simply stopped. But we didn't, or at least some people who were in a position of authority chose not to engage. I'm going to be premiering my new feature film that we have been working on for almost 4 years on December 6th. It will be a 7 p.m. premiere at a major, the largest theater we could find on the Upper West Side of Manhattan at 84th and Broadway. And it is about toxic time bomb, genetically modified foods. We will have all new footage. It's a phenomenal film. We're in the final stages of doing our color corrections and our bottom thirds and editing. And our editors and producers are working feverishly. I was filming all over the world. We have film footage from Russia, from Canada, from India, from England, from France, United States, farmlands where I was traveling. It's all in here. And all the politics and everything and the dirty tricks of this campaign, the lies in this campaign, how they managed, I'm even putting a section in here, how they managed to lie to the media, lie to the people, and win. They only won because of lies. All that's in here. And some of that we believe is criminal. And we have our lawyers working on what might be a major criminal action against them. In any case, if you would like to join me and a panel afterwards for the world premiere of our new feature film documentary on genetic engineering, then give a call and join us. Our number to call is 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. So we may have lost last night due to lies and massive funding on the part of DuPont and Monsanto and their publicists and their hack scientists that we ripped their whole veneer off and show they weren't a professor at Stanford University, and it's not going to cost $500 a year for an extra food bill, and everything they said is a lie, and we've totally dealt with that. But they won, and also because we did not get the support that we needed from those people in positions of power who should have pushed to make this a major mandate. But now we're dealing in a different environment. We're in New York. And there we will get this message out. We will stop them here. So this is not over. And so all of you in California, thank you for all the good work you did, for all the hours you spent. But now it's time for people in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, stand up. Because we're going to take on Monsanto. I'm taking on Monsanto. You're taking on Monsanto and DuPont and this administration for what they did. Shame on them and shame on this administration for allowing the former top people at Monsanto to run the USDA and the FDA's food safety, Michael Taylor and Vilsack, the former governor, and to say that genetically engineered food through the corrupt FDA is just fine. It's equal to all other foods. It is not. But you need the truth. And you need it now, and this film has got the truth. I gave segments, and we were editing nonstop around the clock for over 2 months and traveling to get this information out. Now we have a whole film, and this will be the one and only time it'll be shown in Manhattan, no other place, December 6th, which is a Thursday, 7 p.m., Upper West Side of Manhattan. You must reserve a seat. Every single showing, if any of you have been to my films, you know that every single seat's taken for every showing. We're only showing it that night only. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. This is the opening call for those who choose to be informed, choose to have the truth, and I'm going to give you two things that night. I'm going to give you a very important hardback book that I've written, and I'm going to give you a copy of the film. So you're going to have a whole lot to take home with you. All right? So that's where we're going. That's our announcement, first announcement on that, and this will be packed, and we will start our battle. And this battle, we're going to win, because we've seen their dirty tricks. This time, we're going to be suing them. This time, if they do in New York and New Jersey what they did in California, they will be in front of a court. Our whole team of lawyers here are going to go after them. We're going after Monsanto and their lawyers. Monsanto, you may have unlimited amounts of money, but we got the smartest lawyers, the toughest lawyers. Ours are really smart and tough. Yours are just white-gloved people you pay a lot of money to. Wait till you see what we do to you in discovery. I'm taking them on. This is the beginning. We were not allowed to do this in California. A lot of people who were well-intentioned just didn't know how to fight a fight, and so they got creamed. Those people will not be a part of this battle. This is New York. We fight differently than those in California on social issues. So that's my announcement, the new film. Now let's go over and say hello to Webster Tarpley, who's standing by. Hi, Webster.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Webster, I've got two questions for you, just two. But it's going to take you a while to unspool your thoughts. First and foremost, for many of us, we are not disappointed or angry because of the outcome of the election, because we knew this would what would happen. We're looking forward towards January when Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson and Dennis Kucinich and Ralph Nader and Jesse Ventura and all the other progressive minds who have a background in populist movements join together to create a populist movement without the identity of a given party or a given ego, and work over the next 4 years on platforming, policy making, articles, documentaries to show the truth of what we have to do to take back our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our government from the corporatists that have it now. So I'm not angry with anyone. You know, I'm not even disappointed, because it was rather foregone conclusion. When you spend $2.5 billion, you're buying something with it, and now you got to pay it back, and people are not realizing that it's generally 100-to-1 what they get back. So I want your predictions. We've had Gerald Celente on and Max Kaiser on, both who have been extremely accurate. Tell us what you see happening in the economy. Tell us what you see happening with jobs, and where are these supposed to come from? Tell us what you see about offshoring or re-industrializing America. Will we completely eviscerate anything that can be outsourced, or will we begin renewal? Tell us what you see on global warming, what no one wished to talk about, no one did talk about, and denied any relationship between the hurricane we just had, and next year is going to be a Category 2, the year after Category 3, maybe Category 3 next year. So the devastation's ahead of us, no one's talking about it. So what do you think about this? These are the issues for the first question I have for you.
Well, I don't think you have to wait till January. I think we already started on the eve of the hurricane in New York City, down in near Canal Street. We launched the United Front Against Austerity, which I think people should look at before they get interested in the catalog of people you've just given. I'm afraid those leaders that you've just mentioned are completely heterogeneous. They don't have a common program. They don't have a common approach. You've got, you know, what can we say? Libertarians like Jesse Ventura, whose time as governor of Minnesota was not exactly a paradise on earth, anything but. And others, right? People who have, run their entire political careers, I'm afraid, with modest results compared to what they put into it. I don't see them coming up with a fighting class-based economic program. And therefore, I think they're out of sync with the times. I think they're looking backward, frankly, towards a world that doesn't exist. We are now in a world of brutal depression and brutal austerity, and this is what the ruling class wants. So the United Front Against Austerity is raising demands. First of all, it's very specific. We're going into the so-called fiscal cliff, the lame duck session of Congress, the attempt for a grand bargain. And when Obama says a grand bargain, he means a comprehensive sellout. He means the kind of crushing austerity which will barely touch, probably not touch at all, the luxuries of the super rich, but will gouge deeply into the necessities of the poor. That's what Obama is eager to carry out, right? We've had these reactionary or worse Republicans. They've gotten more fanatical, if anything. And Obama continues this, quest inspired by Wall Street, no doubt, that he should make a deal with them, a deal between the center right and the extreme right. Simpson-Bowles committee with Bowles being an investment banker from Morgan Stanley, and Simpson being an elderly misanthrope who hates people and hates people around him. I don't think that's what we should do. Rather, what we should raise is the demand for the Wall Street sales tax. The one thing that makes all of this austerity needless and pointless is to simply remember that whereas the little people, pay a sales tax on the things we buy, and this varies according to state. In some states, it's even collected on your grocery bill, which becomes a very, very onerous tax, because for a lot of people, that's where a lot of their income goes. The Wall Street sales tax would simply mean that Wall Street would start paying a sales tax, not on their profits, but on their turnover, something that can be easily monitored. Everything going across the exchanges of futures, options, indices, all the combinations of those, and then of the over-the-counter derivatives, right, the sort of designer derivatives, which are signed contracts among counterparties. There is currently in New York State such a tax. It's a financial turnover tax. It's very small, very limited, but it would bring in an estimated $20 to $30 billion every year in revenue if it were collected. But even though the law is on the books, the craven Democratic Party, I think starting with Governor Hugh Carey back in the Jimmy Carter era, more or less, decided that they would remit that money. They'd give it back to Wall Street because Wall Street was threatening them to go to Connecticut or to go to New Jersey, which I think is completely unrealistic. So to raise a fighting demand like this, we also need other demands. The younger generation is being crushed by student debt. They deserve a student loan amnesty. $1 trillion of debt that is basically stopping the lives of young people. They can't get homes of their own. They can't get married. They can't have children. They can't get advanced degrees because they're crushed by debt. This has to be, I believe, swept away. It's one of the most damaging types of financial debt. Then we have the question of health care. Well, I think the answer to that is simple. It's Medicare for all. No word games about single payer or public option, but something anybody can understand. Medicare for all, no age limit, a token fee, and free if you're destitute or unemployed. Similarly, foreclosures. What's the answer to foreclosures? Well, the Fraser-Lemke Act back in the 1930s, a good piece of fighting New Deal legislation, which simply says your primary residence will be protected. All you have to do is get some kind of a minimal payment plan approved by any judge in any court at any level, and you can stay in your home for the duration of this world economic depression that we're in. So that's what I recommend. And we came together. We had quite a number of groups and individuals represented down at the Independent Network News INN okay. Auditorium.
First off, thank you for sharing that. I would like to offer you a different perspective for you to consider. I've spent a lot of time, as this audience knows, interviewing the people who you just were critical of. And right. When I asked them, and I asked them specifically yes or no, and then later to expound on it, the following. Would you put a moratorium on home foreclosures? The answer was yes, for all the individuals, including Gary Johnson. And would you get us out of all the wars and demilitarize us out of over 945 different bases around the world? The answer was yes. Would you take away the power of the Federal Reserve and give it to the Treasury so they could print money without interest? The answer was yes. Would you forgive student loan interest rates? The answer was yes. Would you regain them the right to declare bankruptcy so they're not in debt servitude? The answer was yes. Would you stop the offshoring of jobs in the United States if you have a capacity to do it in the United States? The answer was yes. Also, would you have a single-payer insurance under Medicare? The answer was yes. Would you go through and audit each of the federal agencies and see which are complicit with special interest groups and eviscerating rules and regulations we need, and also get rid of the unnecessary duplicity and bureaucracy that exists? The answer was yes. Would you get rid of the Patriot Act, the Homeland Defense Security Act? Would you get rid of FISA Act? Would you stop the drones over America? Would you stop the drones over other countries? Would you? They were all yes. Would you reintroduce a sense of true diplomacy instead of wartime diplomacy? The answer was yes. Would you get rid of the power of giving major interest groups and major corporations subsidies and tax allowance? The answer was yes. Could you have a sales tax? Listen what you said, and then listen what I'm saying. I proposed a 7% sales tax on all transactions, including the algorithm. The algorithm are the ones that happen with 72% of all sales each day, and they happen multiple seconds. The answer was yes. By the way, our figures were if we actually charged a 7% sales tax, it would be $1.1 trillion. Then I had suggestions. Would you support this? Giving small businesses that qualified zero interest loans, non-repayable, for the first 2 years to let them get established, as long as they hired people with a living wage and health benefits, for every $1 million you hire two people. That would employ over 15 million Americans and help reduce unemployment, but also give them a living wage instead of the servitude wage we have. The answer was yes. Would you stop all the banks and break them down that are too big to fail if we can show that they are holding derivative positions and on their books that would mean they're literally insolvent and hoping that something fails so they can capitalize on their credit default swaps? And the answer was yes. On 34 major issues that impact all of us, would you get all the money out of campaigns and only have public campaigns with three-month cycles on lottery? They said yes. So before those people are attacked, and before we say that they have done nothing, let us understand the conditions of their background, including Dennis Kucinich, because he had the courage to stand up and oppose the war in Iraq, oppose the war in Afghanistan, funding for all these things. But he was in an environment where he was a voice of one of few, and Bernie Sanders also, that did not have the power to make change, but he knew what the change should be. Now, if these individuals are willing to come together and work for a common good, then all people who are interested in real change should come together and leave the egos and the titles at the door and just let's see what works. And then, if they do not want to work together, fine. If they do, fine. So that it is a unifying force that we take together in the future. Final comment
well, unity,
on this.
Gary, unity would be fine. On the other hand, the United Front Against Austerity has existed now for the last 2 weeks and our organizing process going on for quite a while. I'm surprised that the people that you're mentioning, if they're so inclusive, haven't gotten in touch with us because we started this, I think, a little bit earlier. I'd also like to inquire, is Gary Johnson, that's the Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party?
Yes.
Did you mention him?
Yeah, but you have to learn and listen in context. When I interviewed him, I also challenged him on that part of the libertarian values that have been what I consider dehumanizing, and that's where he said he is making changes. Now, whether those changes occur or not, we have to, I believe if people have quality ideas, if I disagree on some of their points, but I agree on the majority of their points, especially those that are important, I don't believe, Webster, that we benefit at all if we become just another ideological group that dismisses someone because we have an agenda
that is not in alignment with them.
All.
I'm simply saying I'm interested in this group that you mentioned, and I would just say, if you look at Gary Johnson, what he ran on was a kind of austerity, which would cause immense human losses here in the United States. It would cost lives, frankly. In other words, his idea of taking down big government includes, I'm afraid, in many cases, the destruction of our entitlement system.
Well, yes and no. That's what they started off at. But they also ran into a buzzsaw of opposition, and then they began to refocus. And you should have had the conversation or heard the conversation I had with him on this program. I addressed these very issues. But again, on 30 different issues that I believe anyone with a humanistic and moral value system of caring and compassion would have agreed upon, with all but one, he was in agreement. Now, whether or not he would honor that or was just saying it for political gain, we won't know until it's put to the test. And during the period of the litmus test of those who want to work together and find common ground, that will be determined after the first of the year. So
what I would do then is I would urge you to do the following. We of the United Front Against Austerity are interested in creating a broad front, but actually starting already now in December, because this is when the entitlement system is coming under attack from Obama, and he said he's going to do it, right? This is the Des Moines Register interview that he did, right? He's going to try to gouge into those entitlements. I would urge them, first of all, get mobilized faster, and secondly, if they have this atmosphere of goodwill that you portray, let them please invite the United Front Against Austerity and some of our speakers, because we do represent some forces where maybe these are not the names that are in the media, but I think in terms of forces on the ground, we have something considerable to add to it.
Webster, everyone who has a positive idea is invited. No one is excluded. No one.
Well,
so
yeah,
let's,
you know,
not. Webster, did you not have your fiber today? Man, you're as acidic as a double-dip orange.
Gary, I have to say that you go back to people who we've known for many decades, and
Ralph Nader, Dennis Kucinich. Before you attack them, let them.
Who's attacking? I'm trying to discuss them, and you seem to think that these are shibboleths, and this is exactly what I'm trying to say. They are not shibboleths. These are people who. Whose flaws are manifest because we've seen them for all these decades. And I welcome the fact that they're meeting. I'm hoping very much that their commitment to your list is sincere, because in the case of Webster,
please don't personally attack anyone else on this show. They're not here to
who's
defend.
I'm not attacking anybody.
No, you have. Maybe you're not even aware of how it does attack people when you're saying. We're saying that we're going to be having everyone who has a positive idea and something to contribute, giving them an opportunity to share that insight. Those whose ideas are considered the most probable to work and to find a form for the future, and it's not going to be instantaneous. Nothing's going to be happening immediately. And also, these people have worked nonstop 20 hours a day, 7 days a week for the last year. They have to have a little bit of time to recover from that. To ask them to immediately come back out to please your need or someone else's need is unrealistic. At the same time, no one has defined your flaws. No one has challenged your group. We don't know who they are. And we are not here to define you as a political entity. We're here to define you as a person who cares enough about people to want to work with others. But before promoting one group versus another group, one group of ideologies versus another, then we're right back into what the left has historically done that has caused them to be so inefficient at making it a better world. Everyone fights one another. I'm not interested in people fighting one another. You get two people in a room who both have good ideas, and all they can do is fight each other over whose idea is the best. Where do you end up? So I'm suggesting that be patient. You will absolutely be invited, and any of the people you feel are important to articulate your points of view will be invited. And start with a clean slate. Wash the mind clean. If someone walks into a room saying, "Oh, Ralph Nader, you know, who are you? You know, you caused us the election. You caused George Bush to win." Not saying you did, but others have done that. Well, then I'm going to have to say then what is the point of speaking with Ralph? And then I have to ask, did you create 273 pieces of legislation, Environmental Protection Agency, and Clean Water Act, and Clean Air Act, and Clean Food Act? More than any human being in America's Congress, Ralph Nader did more to protect the American public. And I believe that we have to pay attention to that. And what would he have done if he continued to have a base that supported him versus a base that threw him under the bus later because, what, he became irrelevant because he wasn't as hip or wasn't as personable? We all have flaws. But he's a person, as are other people that deserve a place at the table. If someone wants to exclude themselves, say, I don't like what you're doing, I don't like what you're saying, I don't agree with any of you, that's fine too. Then they can go out and form their own group. But I believe the reason that we don't win anything and we don't have major accomplishments because there's 16,000 groups and they all have their own ideas and they're all thinking they're right. Nobody wants to work with anyone else. In which case, then it becomes self-fulfilling. They will have their ideas and their egos and their arrogance and their hubris, and not a damn thing will get done. Then they'll blame everyone else for not working with them when they have to be also leaving the egos at the door in order to sit at the table. So we appreciate what you are about. We appreciate your efforts. We appreciate that you're there, your good work on the book, and I'll invite you back for my second question. We're out of time now, so that you can share that with us on an upcoming program. Dr. Webster Tarpley, his book is Just Too Weird. That's the title of it, Bishop Romney and the Mormon Takeover of America. And the website is Tarpley, T-A-R-P-L-E-Y, .net. And we hope that he joins us and with those who are inspired to join him. I'm Gary Nall. We're up to the end of our program. And we have 3 minutes before the top of the hour. Let's open our calls at TalkBack at 888-874-4888. We'll take quick calls only, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And we have Luann on. Hi, Luann.
Gary, I'm listening to the show carefully. Amazing information, and you know it's interesting. Right now, I happen to be taking a course on international certification for coaching, and it turns out that just the reason that I believe that you've been so successful is because you approach everything as an ally. You don't approach it as I'm dictating to you what you have to do. I'm giving you information. I'm here with you on the journey. And I think that's what sets you apart from everyone, in my opinion. So very inspiring. I do have a quick email from someone named Alexander about the elections. I don't know if I have time to read it.
Luann, would you save that for another day? Because we are inundated with calls. We'll be happy to talk with you tomorrow on that, all right?
Surely. Look forward to
it. I'll spend more time on that. Let's say hello to Dave from Brooklyn. Hi, Dave. Quick comment, please.
I just wanted to ask quickly about hello?
Yes, you're on.
Okay. The exceptions that were part of Prop 37, because I know that some of the ads of the pro-GMO people, they made a lot of those exceptions. And
those were all lies. We have deconstructed every lie and every misinformation, and it was all misinformation and lies. Thank you, Dave. And we'll say hello to Al from Rockaway. Hi, Al. And we don't have Al there? All right, let's get our next person up real quick. Who do we have up? Let's see here. I'm not getting... Can we get someone up, please? No? All right, sorry. But we're not able to get anyone up because we're down to the end of the show. I thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more. And final word, tomorrow or later tonight, hopefully WBAI will have its own emergency, completely self-contained studio working until it's able to get back to Wall Street. And we, the Progressive Radio Network, will be able to broadcast live 24/7 starting tomorrow morning. And so we look forward to that. We look forward to having all of our guests back. They've been off the line. We've just been hearing rebroadcasts for the last week. So have a wonderful day, everyone. And I look forward to premiering this new movie, this hard-hitting documentary, where we begin our campaign to challenge Monsanto, to challenge the FDA, and challenge those who believe that the only food we should eat is genetically engineered food. That's not going to happen without a fight, and our fight begins December 6th. Call 877-627-5065 to join us for the premiere. Have a nice day.
You wanna do? I can't tell you who to sock to. you. It's your thing. Do what you want.